This is Future of Water, where we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. I'm Reese Tisdale, and I'm joined by my colleague, Eric Bendler, today. Eric's the Digital Water Research Director for Bluefield, among other things. So, Eric, what's going on?
Not too much, just cold day in Florida for a change.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. It's been nice in Boston. It's cold there, sort of back at you, at least for
exactly.
At least for a couple days. And then I think the roles will switch once again back to the norm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think when we were talking about this podcast and recording, you know, we're talking ideas. And one of the things, Eric, we were looking at a couple of weeks ago is smart water homes and sort of the proliferation of players in that market and new strategies. We actually got into a little bit about sort of the competitive landscape and who's doing what. So before we do that for everybody to listen to, can you help me sort of define what is the smart home for water? How would you define it? What are we talking about?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think listeners of the show will know kind of how a typical utility works, right? So water is sourced from whether it's water or groundwater to the treatment plant, and then it's sent through pipe networks to people's homes, right? And you've got a meter that records how much water is entering each home for billing purposes for the utility. But, you know, one of the big issues, one of the big drivers behind this digital water landscape that we look at in detail is just the fact that, you know, a lot of households, they don't really get access to their own consumption data at any kind of a time scale that's really actionable from like an individual household level, right? Particularly if your utility hasn't adopted AMI, hasn't adopted a smart metering system, you're basically getting that bill maybe once a month, even once a quarter. And it's really the only time that you get any kind of data on how much water you're using as a consumer, as a household. And there are some problems with that. We're trying as a society or individual communities to try to encourage better water conservation kind of at the individual level or at the household level. People need to know how much water they're using, right? You know, you can't really make decisions about changing your water usage if you're just getting that data every quarter. It's the same thing that goes with kind of the digital water landscape for utilities. You can't manage it if you can't measure it, if you don't know how much you're using. And then also there's the issue of leakage, right? If a leak springs up in your house in the middle of a billing cycle and you don't know about it, you're not going to find out until you get this massive bill at the end of the month, right? And so there's a lot of wasted water, and you're obviously spending a lot of money paying the utility back for that water that you didn't use, right? So what we're seeing is that a number of vendors, especially in the US, but also in other parts of the world, in the UK, for example, are kind of following the lead of some of the smart thermostat players like Nest or Ecobee, or the smart doorbell players like Ring, in offering these kind of smart home water management systems that they do a couple of things. They basically track your water usage on daily, maybe even an hourly basis. They can alert you via app if your water usage is changing. You know, they can give you recommendations for how to better conserve water, or even alert you if your consumption is kind of looking like you might have a leak somewhere in the house. And in some cases, they actually even have an automatic shutoff capability so that they'll turn your water off completely to prevent flooding or any kind of water damage if you do have a leak.
You made the point about sort of leakage and billing. I think one, pinpointing the actual dollar value or cost of loss, right? Whether it be leakage or just improper billing. I think that's huge. And that should be really important to the customer. And really what I was getting at, my second point, is that it's really about education. It's helping customers understand not only what their own water usage is, but sometimes it's just a matter of how do you stack up against your peers. At my house, we have a smart thermostat, and I do get, I think it's a monthly email that says, here's how you compare to your neighbors, whether that's my zip code or whether that's my city block. In any case, it just gives me some perspective on where I sit in my family and my house is relative to others. Also, it tells me, are we just really inefficient? Or are we super efficient? And so therefore we don't have to do anything. And so it starts allowing me or us to zero in on certain aspects of our, whether it be the equipment or house, whether it be our heating and cooling system, to just our basic power usage for space heaters or a hot water heater. The same thing should or could be done in the water sector as well, right?
I think the way that these technologies are going, to the extent that they can already do this, I'm not 100% sure, but I think the idea is that if you're applying increasingly advanced analytics to this consumption data at a domestic level, these systems can start to detect even the consumption profiles of individual appliances within your home, right? So if it's you're doing the laundry or you're doing your dishes or you're taking a shower, the system kind of knows how you're using your water and can give you alerts to say, look, you're taking longer showers than you did a year ago, or you know, you're washing the dishes more. Like if you're trying to really make a dent in your water consumption, either for a kind of an economic reason to save on your water bill, or just for, you know, kind of a broader sustainability reason, you want to try to save water. These are the things that you can do personally or as a household to try to cut down on your water usage. This is where you're maybe weakest. And yeah, exactly. As you said, this is where you stack up against some of your neighbors. And this is what you can do to reduce water use, you know, let alone the fact that, hey, maybe we're seeing that your water is running constantly. You must have a leak somewhere. So maybe call somebody to come in and take a look at that. Maybe you've got a leaky toilet. Maybe you've got an actual like major leak that's going to cause some serious property damage if you don't get it addressed quickly. So having that data, again, at time frame that's actionable is really important.
No, I agree with you completely, you know, and it'd be interesting to see how this ultimately plays out. So when we started talking about this, the discussion was about a research note that you had worked on about the Moen Lennard deal. What's the background of that deal and why did we do research on that specifically?
Sure. So Moen is the big U.S. manufacturer of household appliances, right? Kitchen faucets, shower heads, that kind of thing. And earlier this year, they took a majority ownership stake in this company called Flow Technologies, which is one of the bigger, kind of more established smart home water players that's currently out there, at least in the U.S. market. And so the deal, the thing that we wanted to kind of zero in on in this research note that's really interesting is that Moen, at the end of October, they announced a partnership with Lennar Corporation, which is one of the top U.S. home building companies. Basically, the idea is that moving forward, Lennar will install these Flow smart water management systems as kind of a standard feature of new houses that they're putting in the ground moving forward. And I think it's a pretty big deal from kind of a sales volume perspective for the smart home industry, at least in the US. My understanding is that some of the bigger players like Flow or Flume, they generally sell, at this point, they're selling somewhere in the kind of low tens of thousands of devices each year. That's kind of what they're putting into homes on an annual basis. Lennar delivered over 50,000 homes last year in 2019. So it's not quite an order of magnitude increase in sales for a company like Flow, but it's close, right? It's, you know, maybe five or so times what they've been selling in past years, just automatically going into homes before anybody's even, you know, inhabiting them, which is a really easy way to boost your footprint quickly. And so it's a really big deal from kind of the broader perspective of the smart home industry. As you know, as we've talked about a lot, the housing market has actually been one of the bright spots in kind of the post-COVID economy. So this partnership should continue to drive a pretty steady flow of business for Flow and for Moen.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting is for a lot of these solutions, it's easier to get in at the grassroots or the beginning stages of project development. So as they're building a home, they just include it, right? It's easy to, the economies are a lot easier to pencil out in doing that as opposed to, you know, retrofitting existing housing stock. So I think that's where this is huge. I mean, the fact that they do 50,000 homes a year or last year is actually impressive in itself. That's interesting in sort of how that's working, but are there other players or strategies? Are you seeing other things that are analogous to this when it comes to smart homes and water management?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the angles that's really interesting here within this kind of broader smart home market is that, you know, I mean, when you think about smart home technology in general, if you think about a Ring doorbell or an Amazon Alexa, like it's consumer technology, right? And, you know, most of these players, they're selling direct to consumers. You can go on their website, you can go on Amazon, right? And just order this stuff online, have it shipped. It's like a couple hundred dollars. And depending on who you're going with, you might need to hire a plumber to come out and install it. But it's very much a consumer-driven market. But what we're seeing is that a lot of the bigger vendors, the more established vendors, the more successful vendors are kind of finding these really interesting other angles to market, diversifying those market channels to get in with different sets of consumers or to find another way to get their products installed in people's homes. And so, you know, the Moen Lennar deal, obviously, that one is super interesting. It is a big deal from a sales volume perspective. It's a little bit unique. I haven't heard of too many deals like that. But what I have heard a lot of is actually the smart home players partnering with insurance firms, right? Like homeowners insurance companies basically will, they'll give their policyholders either like a rebate or even maybe a discount on their premiums if the homeowner installs a system like this in their home. And in some cases, the insurance company will even help arrange the installation, for example, which it makes sense from their perspective, because if they can facilitate or help their homeowners to prevent leaks before they turn into major property damage, then that's risk that they're no longer kind of on the hook for, that they don't have to cover. They don't have to pay back that water damage if it's been prevented before it causes anything significant, right? That's the one angle there that's really interesting. And we've seen, there's one company called Buoy that's a smart home player that has partnered with over 30 insurance firms in the US, including some of the, you know, big names like USAA or Erie Insurance. But a lot of the other players that we're looking at have at least a handful of insurance firm partners. And that's kind of a one additional channel to market beyond just like direct retail. The other thing that's interesting that we've seen a little bit of is the smart home players actually partnering with utilities, right? Kind of going directly to the utility market. And essentially the way that it typically works is a utility would agree to cover some or, you know, maybe most of the cost of the smart home system for their ratepayers, right? I don't think Boston has one of these in place, but if you're a Boston Water Sewer customer, for example, you can go on and kind of buy one of these things online with maybe like a Boston Water Sewer promo code, and you only pay $30, and then the smart home company turns around and bills Boston Water and Sewer for the remaining, you know, $150 for the device, right? So you're getting a discounted price on it. You have this incentive to put the system in place, and then the utility actually gets access to your data, right? The smart home company will share that data on your home consumption with Boston Water and Sewer, for example, so that they have access. They can see that same data on what your consumption looks like, you know, potentially help you out with any leak alerts. And so we've seen a couple of the smart home vendors going down this road as well. I think Flume is the one that really stands out here. They've got about 15 to 20 utility partnerships to date, mostly in kind of the southern and western US. And that's really an angle that they're exploring pretty aggressively.
This is super interesting. I mean, I could go in a lot of different directions. One, the insurance company angle makes all the sense in the world, you know, and there are other comparables, whether it be for auto insurance or even health insurance. You know, go get a health checkup. If you have an HMO and you go to these sort of random or regular visits, then you get discounts and deals on your insurance. There's no reason your homeowner should not be the same. So it makes complete sense, and also just limits or mitigates some of the risks for these insurance companies. So super excited about that and agree with that angle. But the point that we got hung up on a little bit last week, which I think you were starting to get towards, is are these smart home players, like you talked about the rebates with the utilities and sort of partnerships that they're taking to deploy some of these devices, and the utilities can actually leverage this data. But are these smart home players and solutions providers, could we say they're competing with utilities, or are they partners?
Yeah, I mean, it can be a little bit of both, right? I think certainly in the case of a company like Flume that's really actively going after those utility partnerships, there are clear co-benefits for a utility getting involved with a company like this and getting access to that data, being involved in just the provision of that service to their ratepayers, right? But I think that's a pretty rare case. I mean, most of the smart home players out there, they're not engaging with utilities at all. They're just either going, again, direct to consumer, or maybe going through insurance companies, or they've got these other channels to market. And in those cases, I think like it's a really interesting dynamic, right? Because I mean, it's not like smart home players are competing with utility service provision, right? They're not like going to become an alternative source of water supply. But what they are doing is offering this advanced, more kind of engaging level of customer service with utilities customers that the utilities don't necessarily have access to, right? You know, I think really there's a lot of overlapping functionality with what a utility would provide if a utility goes and installs an AMI system, you know, kind of utility scale AMI for their customers, and then a customer engagement portal, which maybe that's something that their AMI vendor is offering, or maybe they go to a third party like, you know, a WaterSmart or an AquaHawk. But it's the same kind of idea, right? It's that a customer can look at an app and they can see in real time, or maybe on a daily basis or an hourly basis, their water consumption. They can get alerts if they're potentially using more water than usual, if they might have a leak. It's the same exact type of functionality, but it's something that's coming through the utility. And those are all programs that customers have to opt into, right? If your utility goes out and installs an AMI network, you have to agree to download basically the customer engagement portal or the app and use that. So my kind of notion here with the competition angle is that if a utility is trying to make the business case to install it, you know, if they don't have an AMI system already, they don't have a customer engagement portal already, they're trying to kind of make the case to do that and say, look, we're going to be able to offer much better, much more proactive and engaging customer service to our customer base if we have this type of technology in place. And 20% or 10% or 50% of their customers already have these smart home devices themselves. They're already getting those services. They're not going to opt in for the utility scale customer engagement. What reason do they have? They already have the service that they're needing, right? So if utilities aren't quick, if they're slow to move in this type of technology, if they're slow to adopt AMI or they're slow to adopt customer engagement, they're not partnering with these smart home players, they could potentially be a situation where they get a little bit locked out of getting access to that data and getting access to just the benefits of that level of customer service and that relationship with their ratepayers. And I think that's not direct competition by any means, but it is kind of an interesting dynamic that's taking place. I've even heard some people in the market, you know, having conversations about this stuff, that utilities almost are feeling kind of blindsided by this whole smart home movement because somebody's coming in and offering these really high level advanced digitally enabled services on top of the utility, and the utility's kind of getting shut out.
This is where we got hung up last week in the discussion. So I would say, and it's a little complicated, I'm trying to unpack it myself mentally as we talk through this. And that is, I think that the utilities traditionally, even in this case, their business kind of stops at the front door, right? Where the meter is. And are utilities willing and able to get inside to the house and provide insights? Does it not get a little tricky, you know, when they have greater knowledge? I think they want to have that knowledge, but are there implications or are there risks associated with that? You know, whether, I don't know if it's liability or that's one aspect of it. So the question is, when does the utility, at what point does it stop? And my thought is sort of inside the fence, outside the fence, you know, up to this point, you monitor what it is. And they benefit from these smart home applications. The other point I made to you last week was, these smart home players, the value of what they have is greater than just to the utility, right? So what they do is they get to collect that data. So if they're partnered with the utility, and that's really what that relationship is, and if it's limited to that, there's a business relationship. And sure, there's a quantifiable dollar agreement, let's say, that's tied to that. But the smart home player, what they can do is they get that data, but it's not just water data that's of value. They can sell that data or use that data to sell it to appliance companies, insurance companies, could be security firms. There are all sorts of energy companies. You know, how much water is being used in this household? Because it has to be. They can find other ways, and I'd say even more money on the back end that they can't get with just the utility. So I just don't know how the relationships would be arranged. But to say, I question whether they're actually competing. My argument is that utilities are actually the beneficiaries at the end of the day. Now, where they're not the beneficiary is if you have one in, you know, some of these devices in your home, Eric, let's say where you live, and your water utility, you're using less water now because you're more educated about your water usage. You've said, oh my God, my dishwashers, you know, wasting water, or I'm going to start using a dishwasher instead of washing my dishes in the sink, or I take shorter showers now, or irrigation, right? Or if it's tied to your irrigation system, are you going to just use less water because now you actually have a better understanding? I just think, like I said, utilities benefit doing it either way, but I'm questioning whether they're ultimately going to get into the house. You could disagree with me.
No, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, I think that is the traditional way that most utilities have operated and how they do operate, that look, you know, we deliver a service, we deliver water to the door, and then what you do with it is up to you, but you have to pay for what you use, right? Like that's kind of the model, you know? But I think the discourse in the industry around motivation for digital transformation at the utility level. What motivations do utilities have for adopting new types of technology, being better about using their data? I mean, obviously there's tons of operational benefits if you're talking about what they're doing within the distribution network or what they're doing at the treatment plant, whether it's optimizing energy usage or optimizing chemical usage or finding and fixing leaks and addressing asset failures before they turn into bursts. There's all kinds of reason for the kind of operational and asset management piece. But when you're talking about the customer management piece, beyond, I guess, more precise billing with like an AMI system, the benefit is to just improve that relationship with your customers, right? And, you know, I think we talk about all the time, utilities have this major marketing and kind of a branding problem in the sense that people don't value water. They don't value water service, right? They think I should turn on my faucet and I should get my water. And if I don't, then it's a big problem and I'm going to call in and complain. Customer perceptions of their utilities are generally pretty negative because the only time you think about your utility is when they're asking you for money, you know, on a monthly basis, or there's a problem and you have to call and complain about it, right? So this embrace data and digital technology to improve that relationship, to make the kind of utility to customer relationship a stronger one, a more positive one, a more proactive one. These types of technologies and that kind of real-time consumption data and the services that go along with that, like leak detection and alerts about how to improve your water usage or how to find and fix leaks that might have arisen in your house. Those are all things that utilities can offer that can improve that relationship for the longer term. It's kind of a, you know, more like building goodwill with your customer base. And again, there's technologies out there that utilities can invest in to do that. But if their customers are already using these smart home devices and the data is going to Flo and Moen and not to the utility, then they're kind of cut out of that conversation, right? They're still basically just that out of sight, out of mind, we're providing the water, and all of the kind of modern digital services that go on top of that are being provided by somebody else. And that's kind of where I'm coming from a competition standpoint. They're not competing in any way with utilities directly. And in fact, they're more competing with some of the utility vendors like metering players or really the customer engagement players. But to be kind of cut out of that conversation, to not have access to that data and to not be able to deliver those kind of value-added services because somebody else is already doing it. That's the part that I think is really interesting.
Yeah, and I'm with you 100%. And that's where I think like the partnership model or leveraging sort of, this has all come about because of the technology. So it sort of gets back to the Nest thermostat, right? So there are rebates that are provided and there's a big driver for the utility. It's, you know, Reese Tisdale is using less power now because, or less electricity because, you know, he has a better understanding. When he's away, he turns it off, or, you know, if he's on vacation, he can just remotely turn off his thermostat or, you know, turn it down, should I say. So I think that's really interesting. I think the other thing, you know, you raise a good point about negative perception. And I think, you know, for the water sector, it's a hard sell, right? I think it's worked in electric power and it's definitely a certain demographic and or businesses that say, hey, you know, I'm concerned about one, the bottom line and costs, and two, I'm concerned about climate. And I think this is a way to address this. I think the water sector has to do the same thing because there are significant costs associated with water usage. I know everybody thinks, oh, water's cheap, but it's not really because there's so much that goes into it, right? Including electric power to pump the water, to treat the water. There are a lot of factors. So I think this is super interesting. And like I said, as part of this is happening because of technology applications and other sectors and segments that are now applicable to the water space. And so I'm really excited to see how this changes. And I think, you know, one of the questions I had for you, the pandemic is sort of throwing things up in the air. You mentioned earlier that actually the housing market is in fact strong, but what was this market looking like even before the pandemic, or have there been any implications over the past couple of months because of it?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I mean, I think basically we've been really interested in tracking how this segment has been progressing over the past couple of years. And you know, before COVID-19 hit, we were seeing a lot of activity in the smart home space. I mean, a lot of strong kind of growth signals and a lot of interest in the market. So just to give you some idea, about 25% of the early stage funding that we tracked for the digital water sector as a whole between 2015 and 2019 went to smart home companies, right? So like a quarter of total funding was going to these types of companies. And actually about a quarter of the new companies that were formed, that the new startups that we tracked during that same period were targeting this kind of residential or smart home space. And that's up from like, I think 3% earlier in the 2000s, right? So huge surge in interest in these types of companies. But that has completely fallen off a cliff since COVID-19. So if we look at, again, early stage funding going to smart home water management players in 2019, the full year total was about $150 million in venture funding. In the first half of 2020, it was about $2.5 million. So like a 98% decline. That's for smart home water companies, basically, for smart home water management, or we say like residential digital water startups.
And that's just for smart homes?
Oh, yeah. But it's definitely been a lot more severe in the residential space than it has been in municipal digital water, you know, utility scale digital water applications. I mean, everything, you know, VC funding, early stage funding for digital water as a whole has fallen off a cliff, but the cliff is a lot deeper for the smart home players. You know, and if you talk to these companies to kind of find out what they're seeing, you know, how this is impacting them, it's kind of a mixed bag. I mean, as you, I think, mentioned earlier, you think like, okay, people are staying at home more. There's more time and maybe more interest in home renovations. And I know we talked earlier this year about all of the, you know, wood that was going into deck renovations and stuff like that, right? Like there is this one strand, maybe this one segment of the population that is like, well, we're sitting at home a lot more. Let's just put some money into our home and make the experience a little bit better. And you could see smart home technology as a whole kind of benefiting from that. But on the other hand, I mean, this stuff is expensive and it's certainly discretionary spending, right? It's not like, you know, essential to go out and buy a smart home system. So with people's jobs maybe a little bit less secure, with kind of the overall economy a lot more uncertain, people maybe just aren't spending on these types of purchases the way that they would have in the past. And again, you mentioned earlier the installation challenges, right? You know, a lot of these smart home devices, you need a licensed plumber to come out and install it. You're actually cutting the water source into your home, especially if you want to have that automatic shutoff capability. It's not just like a clip-on device that you can install yourself. You need to have a licensed plumber come out and do it for you. And so, again, that's not something that you necessarily want to do in the middle of a global health crisis. It's really the same issue that the utility scale metering companies have been facing as well.
Well, I agree. And that's why the Moe and Lennar deal that you talked about is interesting, because it starts at the beginning of a project, right? It happens from the outset. It's the retrofitting that is actually a big challenge. I mean, that, I don't hate to keep talking about it, but like the Nest thermostat or the Nest smoke detector, Ecobee. And just for the record, I don't have a Nest thermostat, but I used to. But the point is, I can install it myself, right? I can watch a YouTube video and do it. So the plumbing challenge is a significant barrier to this. So that's one aspect of it. I think the other thing that we really haven't talked about, or maybe just a little bit, is just water quality, right? You know, our general take is there are growing concerns about water quality. I don't want to say it's out of line with what it's been historically over time, but things like PFAS are finding their way into our water supplies, not to create a scare, but it's a reality. And so therefore, are there solutions that ultimately can be deployed in the home that give you at least a warning, or, you know, or lead is another one, right? 120 Water has applications for lead testing, but is there anything real time ongoing that you can get? I think it's interesting. I mean, you mentioned all these startups over the past 5 years that have entered the market. So one can only imagine that they are positioning to, in some cases, sell themselves. And so is there going to be consolidation, or are there players out there that are ready to pick up the pieces as things grow?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably pretty likely. I think we'll see a couple of things happening with COVID, you know, the impact that it's having on the market. I mean, certainly, I think this angle of exploring kind of alternative channels to market and exploring these partnership models, whether it be through a home builder like Lennar or through an insurance company or through a utility, I think that we're going to see more of the smart home players kind of focusing on that if they're not having a lot of success with just those direct retail channels right now. Consumers aren't necessarily making a bunch of investments in this type of technology during this period of economic uncertainty. Maybe they'll have more success going elsewhere. And I think that maybe, you know, not to say that the timing of this Moe and Lennar deal was completely dictated by COVID-19, but certainly I think it is a step in the right direction in terms of kind of diversifying amidst the pandemic, right? So that's kind of the first thing that we're expecting to see. The other one, yeah, as you mentioned, is just some consolidation, right? I mean, a lot of these companies, these startups may be really hurting right now, just as we're seeing in kind of the municipal digital water market. So, you know, there's a lot of established players that might be kind of looking at this space and trying to figure out how they could get involved. And many have to some extent, right? I mean, obviously, from a smart home perspective, like Amazon and Google are huge players, right? Amazon has Alexa and the Ring doorbell, you know, Google has Nest. They've already made some significant investments in getting involved in that type of technology. So, you know, what's to stop them from getting involved in the water side of it as well? And you know, whether that be through, probably through acquisition versus like building up their own solutions. But yeah, there's plenty of players out there that they could buy to get a foothold in the space. But also, you know, I mean, the case with Moen getting involved with Flow Technologies, I mean, there are plenty of other plumbing and home appliance type companies that could also be interested in this market, whether it be like a Kohler or a Delta you know, even like the pool player, you know, like Pentair and Evoqua that have a strong foothold in kind of the residential pool segment, all of that kind of home water management was all ripe for technological change and innovation and disruption. And so I think it's probably likely that we'll see some of those players, you know, continue to get involved in the smart home market in one way or another. And I think a lot of that is going to be either through strategic investments or just straight up acquisitions.
Yeah, I think your points are right on when it comes to also the type of players, right? I think those plumbing players are really interesting. You know, they do acquire companies, and as things change, they're obviously going to be right there because it definitely impacts them. Like I said, it's not like every home and the world has to have these technologies. I mean, all it takes is a slice of them. And then you get also a representative data sample or size that you can work with that, like I said, insurance companies can leverage and understand, and the utilities themselves get better understanding of what's happening, and, you know, across the board. I think the impacts could ultimately be huge. It doesn't come without challenges, but yeah. This is super interesting. I'm really glad we put that research note out. Has it been published yet, if I may ask?
It should be this week. I think the final production is happening right now. So we should have it out probably by like tomorrow or Friday.
Okay. All right. Well, this went on actually, I think, longer than we expected.
It's an interesting topic.
Yeah, you're finally getting a couple days off over the next couple days. So I made you do this today. So I feel bad, but really do appreciate you. Really appreciate you stepping up. So with that, why don't we call it a day, Eric? And thanks again. And we'll catch up soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Reese.
All right, man. Take it easy. So before we sign off, all I can ask is subscribe to the Future of Water. I think this is a good episode and representative of what we do. Give a review. Reviews help. It also helps us spread the word and show people that we seem to know what we're talking about. So share it with your friends. If you have any questions, or actually also, do you have any good ideas or topics that you'd like us to address? It doesn't have to be exactly what we do. We're always looking for good ideas. So send us a note to waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com and give us an idea, because we're doing this for you. And like I said, tell a friend about it. But at the end of the day, this podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by Bluefield Research. To learn more, go to bluefieldresearch.com. We'll see you soon, everybody. Take care.